No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. And today we got the one and only Travi on the show. How you feeling, man?
I feel great, man.
Yeah.
Excellent. Like, I haven't been out here in a long time. And I try to keep it to like a week and a half, two tops. But
okay.
So it's my second day.
Wait, where do you spend your time now?
I live upstate New York, like out in the fucking woods, bro. Like,
really?
In the cut. Yeah.
What made you want to move there?
I grew up upstate, like in between Syracuse and Rochester.
Because I was wondering where Geneva was when I heard that.
Everybody says like, are you Swissish? Are you Swissish? No, I'm not.
It's like that in like Maine and shit too, where there's like hella parts of Maine that are like Paris, Maine.
We're just talking
like,
to your man, he says he's from New Hampshire.
Same so here, yeah.
I'm you're from Hampshire?
Yeah.
Crazy.
We're from the same town.
That's wild. Yeah. It's deep. Like, anything above the city, they consider upstate. You know what
right.
I mean? So, like, I live upstate now, which is like an hour and a half north of the city. But
okay.
I grew up 5 hours like west. You know what I mean? Like in between Syracuse and Rochester, like smack dab in the middle.
Right. And so you just wanted to go back at some point. You just were tired of the fast paced lifestyle.
I just like needed that solitude. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'd lived in the city for years. Then in 2009, I moved to Miami. Worst idea ever.
And
like,
really?
I'm a like super introverted person. I mean, like I kick it at home. So like moving to the city was the worst idea ever. But I stayed there for like 13 years.
Really?
And in 2009, I went to Miami, and that shit got played in like the first 5 months. I was like, I gotta go back home. And
but like, you moved to Miami, what? Like pretty much at the moment where all of a sudden your career was just going nuts.
It was. All right, you know what I mean? And I was working with Kool & Dre at the time, and they kind of convinced me to move down there. They're like, yo, we can work all the time, come down here.
Right.
Literally, like, a half a year after I moved there, they all moved to L.A., and I'm like, you motherfuckers. Okay, they left me hanging.
Let's think of that as a preview of what's to come, and let's just go all the way back to the beginning. Because it's like the whole story is pretty fascinating to me, because I feel like you're like a super under-discussed, massive influence on the culture these days. And after I did that interview with Gata, that really just like stood out to me in my head. Like he was painting the picture of you and Tyga meeting on Melrose.
Yeah,
and I'm just
Q
like,
was there.
Like that's it a
was,
crazy era right there with a lot of talent exploding at the same time.
I'll never forget that day, man. Like I was just bullshitting. I was staying with Pete from Fall Out Boy at the time in his basement. And he almost killed me, but we can get into that later, motherfucker. But
Pete Wentz murder charge coming soon. Don't turn this podcast off,
bro. It gets intense.
Smash the like button, bitch.
So I was staying with Pete, and he would just let me whip his fucking like $500,000 bins whenever, you know what I'm saying?
Because he's like the biggest star in the world at that moment, right?
Jesus H. Macy. It was crazy. So I'd take the whip and just drive up and down Melrose. I mean, like, I'd never been out here for like that, you know what I'm saying? Like, for that long, that amount of time. So I'm just sucking it all in, and like, I park the car and I'm walking down, and you know, everybody's trying to sell mixtapes and shit. I'm like, and they're like, oh, that's that dude, blah, blah. I'm like, shit. And at first, I buy him, and then I'm like, nah, bro. Like, there's a point when you gotta say no, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Just stop.
But I'm so glad my time on Melrose was after the mixtape era.
Oh, my God.
Because that would have definitely been a thing.
That's still Times Square to this day, though.
We could have like, sold CDs, though, too, so it would have been sick, yeah.
So I'm chilling. I think I was, can't remember where I was going, but it was Tyga, Gata, SB, who used to DJ for Tyga, and then Q, school Q's in the back just like this, like unfazed, and like not that I want anybody to geek out, you know what I'm saying? Like, or expect anybody to geek out, but he's just like sized me up and shit, and I'm like, what up, bro? Like, and so Tyga gives me his mixtape or whatever. But we used to have in Gym Class Heroes, we used to have this label called Roadside Records, you know what I'm saying? And our moniker was, yeah, give us your demo, you know what I'm saying, and we'll sign you, and your demos hit the streets the same night, because we used to throw them shits out the bus window, you know what I'm saying? Like, literally stack them up and just throw the bitches out the window. Like, yo, we, like, it was like an inside running joke between me and my drummer. Like, Like, yo, we should cats would run up with mixtapes. Yo, we should sign on the roadside. Nah, you think so? Yeah, let's put them on the roadside. And then we fuck around and blog what roadside really meant. I think it pissed a lot of people off. But
right.
It is what it is. But yeah, like, it was a funny day on Melrose when I met Gator and Tiger.
Right. Okay. But okay, let's just talk about your childhood and shit. I want to get into like the early days and shit before we get all the way to the craziness that has been your life. So what was your life coming up in Geneva, New York? Like, what was the upbringing like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm biracial. And Geneva's it's a small college town, you know what I'm saying? And but my family is gigantic. Like, my dad's side of the family. Quick preface, like, so my last name is McCoy, MCCOY. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the lineage, an MCCOY married an MCKOY. Like, same last name, spelled different. So if you're a McCoy in upstate New York, whether it's a C or a K, we're all family, you know what I mean? So I had my dad's side of the family, and my mom had a little bit of family there, my grandmother and shit. And I mean, I was a fat kid growing up, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I'd get busted on all day, and just that's kind of like where like the internalization started, where I just started keeping to myself and just like really getting into music. My dad was a bass player. He still plays bass. So I was like definitely in the mix. Like, my dad would be listening to like Sly Stone and shit. My mom's like listening to Def Leppard and fucking Poison with her hair like teased all the way the fuck up here. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it was like this crazy like dichotomy of like, you know, like my dad's side of the family, like all B-boys and shit, and like my mom's brothers are metalheads. So it's just like, what the fuck is going on?
Right.
But like, I just soaked it all up, you know what I mean?
And wow, that's like so unique for that time period in particular. Like, I was actually just having the conversation with Toby from H2O about how fucking being a kid, like, I remember having friends who would really tell me, like, you cannot listen to like hardcore listen to Jay-Z at the same time. It's just not okay.
So just flip that. You know what I mean? Being black in a small town.
Right.
And one, being the fucking sore thumb, no matter where the fuck you're at, because I've been 6 foot since like I'm in fifth grade. You know what I mean? So
right.
Add like a few hundred pounds to that shit. And so, I'll get tested all the time. Because, you know what I mean? Like, growing up in Syracuse, we go to hardcore shows all the time. Like,
okay.
And I was the kid there, like, you know, Earth President. Like, so all these kids are like hardline, straight edge kids. And like, I'm there smoking cigarettes and shit, like, getting litty before I go in and get going in to whoop some ass, you know what I'm saying? And so it was like, I get tested from both sides, you know, go to school and shit. Like, and kids would, like, I'd wear like a, you know, just a band shirt, whatever. Like, what? Pick a name, throw it in there, and white kids would be like, name one song off the album. Like, bro, why the fuck would I be wearing this shirt? Like, I mean, obviously now it's like,
now that's the whole thing.
It's like everybody's just rocking whatever the fuck. But
I
like,
saw a tweet today though that the metal community is mad at Kourtney Kardashian for wearing like a Cannibal Corpse shirt.
I actually had to turn my Cannibal Corpse shirt. I can't remember what album it was. It was the one with.
Did you turn it inside out at school?
I had to turn it inside out, and I had a D's Nuts shirt that they made me turn inside out as well.
They at least had a song called "Raped with a Knife."
Yo, they had some crazy.
Like, I don't even know if I should be laughing, but that's just, you know, they had like the worst, meanest, evilest
but
song
the
titles
illest
ever.
Graphics, yes. Ever. Like, what was the one?
I couldn't even believe they were real.
Yo,
when I was
real,
a kid. Like, how is this fucking real? And you know what they were? They were like when Tipper Gore and all of them, all the like senators' wives decided they wanted to protest.
Advisory sticker and all that shit.
I think like they wanted to go at NWA because like they're saying fuck the police, but they were like, we can't only pick on black people, so we got to find some white people doing some fucked up shit too. So we're going to pick on Cannibal Corpse,
exactly.
Who I think up till that point were kind of just like any old death metal
just
band.
Doing
like,
what they, doing whatever the fuck they
weren't
wanted.
Like begging for the mainstream to accept them or anything.
I don't think they are any like or ever have tried to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, they just had this one crazy moment that made them like legendary in so many people's minds, you know?
Fuck.
They're still going out though. I seen that they put out an album like a couple months ago.
That's amazing, man. Yeah, I had to turn a lot of shirts inside out. My fucking Pantera, what's that record? Something Beyond Driven. It was basically like somebody bent over getting like a leather dildo shoved in their ass. But you had to like really like pay attention.
Right.
And my principal really paid attention that day. I was like, what the fuck? He's like, you either going home or you gotta flip that shit.
Yeah.
It became this whole thing.
I remember I bought a Marilyn Manson.
I
bought an Antichrist Superstar shirt.
Oh, shit.
Walked over to my mom in the food court at the mall. She's like, no, you're returning it right now. Boom. I owned it for like 5 minutes.
That's hilarious. I went to a Manson concert for a birthday party.
Mm.
And I left mortified. Completely mortified.
Really?
Like, this dude, he was walking around with like these prosthetics and like shitty like shit stains dripping down his back. I was like, yo, all right, y'all can keep this shit. But like,
wow.
I mean, there were some moments like the fucking stage setup was wild. Like he had like stained glass and shit behind him. He's like at the pedestal or whatever. And like, I'm like, this shit is crazy.
I wonder if he's still doing like fecal matter stuff on stage, or is that over? I feel like he might have had to just like simplify his act.
He probably has a fucking side bag at this point, no?
I don't know.
One of those gastro bags?
You would just assume he would have a colostomy bag?
I'm saying, bro. That dude, I've heard some stories about that motherfucker.
Like, I learned a lot of words from him as a kid. I feel like I might have learned the word colostomy bag from him.
maybe.
Or like tourniquet.
Tourniquet. He had a song called Tourniquet.
And
I remember that.
I like looked it up because of that song.
Yo, funny story about tourniquet, right? Yo, so we're watching. and I think it was when Matt Pinfield was hosting like 120 minutes back in the day.
I was thinking about that the other
and,
day.
And Matt Pinfield's a fucking walking inside, like dictionary when it comes to music, bro. Like,
right.
So I'm watching, we're watching this tourniquet video. We used to stay up mad late to watch 120 minutes. And my boy Andy's watching. He's like, yo, you wouldn't hit that? I'm like, bruh, like what the? You know that's, come on, man. Like, and he's like, what? I'm like, nothing.
Wow.
2 days later, he's like, why the fuck you ain't telling me, man? Like, hey, you into what you into, you know what I'm saying? You into what you into, bro.
Wow, that's amazing. You know what I mean? Like, so would you describe it as just overall, like, tough growing up biracial in a small town at that time? Like, just from both sides, just you just had, like, a lack of understanding from
drawn and everyone? Quartered, you know what I'm saying? And, like, you know, one of the first kids to be tatted in my school, like had my septum pierced, all these piercings and shit. And so like, you know, black kids are like, oh, Travis trying to be white. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, so it was just literally like, and then I was just like, I think it was probably around 10th grade where I was like, I don't give a fuck no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's around the time we started gym class. And a year or so later, you start getting praised for being different, you know, and that's like, oh, that's crazy, because y'all used to clown the fuck out of me and Matt, like, you know, a year and a half ago.
Because
like,
you guys were getting some level of popularity, or because like, the culture locally, was just sort of changing?
No, the culture was definitely not changing.
Right, okay,
they were still douchebags.
Because that sound crazy now, because when you think about, like, oh, like the cool, tall, black kid with tattoos and weird hair, and he dresses different. I mean, now it feels like that's like a recipe for people to be looking at you like you're a fucking star. Or
absolutely.
Some shit,
and it's funny that you say that, because like, it's like if kids knew like what I had to go through to like dye my hair purple or green or some shit, like if I was to do that shit back then, like.
Right.
Clown fest, you know what I'm saying? But like, I mean, it gave me tough skin, but also like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, like also made me like, kind of like want to push it more. You know what I'm saying? Like when we started like getting like, when the fucking Kiki's kind of stopped, it was like, I'm just going to do whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like,
where do you think that like confidence came from to take the shit that people were making fun of you for and just lean into it and just be like, fuck it, I do not care, like I believe in what we're doing, this is who I am?
I think it's literally just not giving a fuck, you know what I'm saying, and taking the negatives and making them positive, you know what I mean? Like, because I mean, there's times in high school I just go home and be like, fuck man, like I don't want to go to school tomorrow, like I don't want to deal with this shit, you know what I'm saying?
When you're a teenager, you just want to be normal. Exactly. You just want to be
left the fuck alone, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, not trying to fit in with nobody, like just being me. Like, and I had my best friend in high school was a girl named Amy, and we shared a locker, and like we used to go all out decorating our locker. We had a boom box, so everybody like would crowd around our locker and shit before class. And so like We kind of had like this niche clique of like five or six kids that like, you know, we all sat together at lunch and shit. But Yeah, it was just like that whole, it's like that Americana, like small city jocks versus whoever's different type shit.
You know, it's definitely still happening under probably like different terms, but it's still, you know, the kids will always find something to pick on each other for, you know?
I can't remember who said it, but it's like, if, you know, if we were all one fucking color, it'd be like, oh, look at this motherfucker's ear. Right. You know what I'm saying? You got to find something to fuck with somebody about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, look at LA.
It means to make yourself feel better.
You LA know? Is just like full of dudes who look like each other and they're beefing with each other too. Over where they live at. You know, like, ridiculous. Oh, you live on that street and I live on this street and for some reason we hate each other.
The same shit.
We got to kill each other.
Except that, we weren't really killing each other.
Right. But, you know, I'm just saying, like, people will always, like.
There are some times I was about to go to school with a bat or something and probably do some damage, but, like, nothing crazy.
That's, like, the ultimate, like, question of humanity is how do you, like, convince people that you're just people? And that you don't have a reason to, like, feel aggression towards other people and, like, that.
I think if you had that sense of like back then, like it probably freak a lot of people out and make them angrier.
They wouldn't understand where the fuck you were coming from for sure. You had to go to war at that time. You like define yourself by who you have beef with.
Yeah, it's like high school. I mean, and a lot of those kids that like they peaked in high school. I love saying that. It's like the best. They peaked in high school, and like I remember like when we first started touring heavy. Like going back home and seeing motherfuckers just miserable. Like, damn, they're never gonna leave here.
You know, I would say that's probably almost like 90% of people.
Yeah,
it's like high school is kind of like the epicenter of your social life.
And a part of you wants to be a part of that, but like once you realize like there's life after high school. Shout out to Daryl Hall for that. like it's like fuck. Soon, 4 years of this shit, I'm out. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm a ghost. Like. Had no intentions of staying around that town at all. But when I go back home, it's all love. It's like I drive back by my old school and shit. I'm like, damn, it's like a bittersweet feeling. You know what I mean?
Like I remember when there was the 10-year anniversary, and like my whole life I had thought, you know, oh, it's gonna be great. I'm gonna go to the 10-year anniversary. And then when it actually came around, I'm like,
what the fuck?
I'm gonna fly back to the other side of the country to hang out with a bunch of fucking bum ass losers that are gonna look at me all crazy because I'm, you know, actually doing something with my life. Like, what? Like, why would I want to go stunt on those people? I don't even remember damn near any. Like, I've just had this experience too many times where I would go back home, go to the mall. Some dude's like, "Whoa, we were in high school together," and I'm like. I met so many goddamn people since high school. You have no idea how long ago I forgot who you were. I'm sorry, but
I'm such a people pleaser, man. Like I bump into people at shows. You know, like, oh yeah, bro, you remember me with high school? I'm like in the beginning, I was like, yeah, and you go along and like. Hopefully they'll say their name in the sentence, so you can be like, "Yo, all right." And so you can say their name as you're leaving and make them feel like you remember them. But I gave up. If I don't remember you, I just don't remember you. You know, I'll be honest too. Like,
I love people who preface it though, who are like, "I met you this time at that."
They
give you the parameters, so you can kind of locate in your brain and be like, "You know what? That does, I did meet people that day."
Instead of sitting there for like 20 minutes, going like, "Damn, wait." What? Where again? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
part of me wishes I had been taking like meticulous notes about everything I've been doing my entire life. And if I knew when I was like 18 that I would just forget everything that happened in my entire life, I probably would have done that.
It'd been a good bet, man. Like,
you know,
I used to keep journals and shit, but I only get like 4 or 5 pages in.
Always,
out. And you know what? One thing about journals, like, and I'm about to get real deep on you, real quick, Adam. Like,
let's do it.
It's like. Nobody's watching you writing your journal. You can literally write anything you fucking want and go back 20 years later and be like, damn, I scaled a fucking 20-foot wall when I was 14 and saved a chick that was trying to commit suicide or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, you can literally write your own fucking, your whole backstory.
Right.
And not that everyone would believe you, but I don't know where the fuck I'm going with that one.
But I mean, what you could look through, and it sucks, like we were talking about MySpace earlier, is that like none of us seem to know how to look through our MySpaces, but like, you know, for like the past like 11, 12 years or whatever, I could go look through my tweets, but somehow that doesn't feel as cool because that's like what I wanted other people to see me saying, as opposed to like a journal, like, is like what you are just writing down for your own. Nobody's like, supposed to see it
for sure. Like, so it is like MySpace was kind of like you have, I mean, there's no difference in like Instagram either, you know, everybody's trying to flex. So like, I used to flex in my like away messages and shit on AIM. Ooh, like, yeah. I would like really deep song lyrics and shit. Have everybody, what's on his mind? What's he going through? Shit, chilling, playing NFL Street. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Having an away message alone in itself was a flex because that showed that you had good internet that you could leave it
or
signed in all day.
Or
a sidekick.
Sidekick was the shit.
I remember Johnny Cupcakes was the first person.
He's the first person
I ever saw with a sidekick when he was on tour with On Broken Wings, which was the band that he was in back in the day.
He was doing all the sampling and shit, right?
And even at that time, he told me that he was selling $10,000 worth of shit a day.
Yo, killing him. Him
blew my fucking mind. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
We've been down with Johnny for ages. Every time we played in Boston, he'd come with bags. Like, shit. Like, you look up Gym Class Heroes, like 2000. 4, 5, 6 with cupcakes and crossbones all day, every day.
Because like, back in the day at shows, it used to be like the person who was the best mosher would be like, Johnny would be like giving them clothes and stuff.
Yeah. Little incentive to whoop somebody's ass.
Yeah. And so you'd see all the dudes who were moshing real hard and they'd have a fucking Johnny Cupcake shirt on and shit blew up. And now they're no longer on Melrose, but they did have there's a Pokestop still.
That shop he had the store. Dope. I think he said he had the dudes from Disney come and put the piping in with the frosting coming out the pipes and shit in the ovens that were.
I do, yeah. I never saw it in real life, but yeah.
Oh man, it was crazy.
He was the first person I ever met in my life where I was like, oh damn, you're like doing something with yourself. Like you're really making money and shit. You're like building a brand. Like that had never really occurred to me until I saw him doing it.
And I had never. I had just heard the term brand building, like, and he was like the icon, you know what I'm saying? Like, it started off super grassroots and organic, and then just, I mean, put fucking tons of work in, you know what I'm saying? Like, I remember, like, he would shoot me pictures of him and his mom packing and shipping shit off, like, this is my day, bro, and like, but I'm so soft-spoken, so sweet, like, man, yeah, like, I could chill with that dude all day, every day.
And in Boston, that shit is still like, I remember I was in Boston on a trip and just seeing so many goddamn people wearing it. It's like a Red Sox logo where it's like,
for sure,
they think
for
of sure. that as like very much something Boston. They're proud of that came from Boston. Mm-hmm. Boston don't got that much of that.
Damn. Like, I couldn't put it better. Like, we actually, right before the pandemic and all that shit started, we did a tour with 311 and The Offspring. And I think he had like a one-off in Boston, and we did a collab with Johnny, and those shirts fucking. Damn. I think the first one was like, I think we did pink, like baby blue and pink, and then we did the Boston colors, the red and the navy blue, and them shits flew like cupcakes.
So the band starts taking off. While you're still in high school, are you just like going and playing like local metal shows or what? And what was the mission statement when you started the band?
One was just like, I don't think there was a mission statement. Like we literally, well, how it went down was I was playing drums in a punk band at the time called the Antisocial, and Matt, drummer of Gym Class, and the original guitarist Milo, they were in a band called Hey Little Buddy. Mm-hmm. And we both played my homegirl Marta's graduation party. And they were just playing instrumental. They didn't have a singer. So after our set, like, fuck it. I went up and grabbed the mic and started, like, just spitting. And we're like, it's kind of dope. You know what I mean? I think we might have did, like, a... Oh, yeah. They played an instrumental. And I rapped J.Ru the Damages Can't Stop the Prophet over it. Like, and the shit was so fly. And we were like... Yo, after the party and shit, we're like, yo, let's get up like in a week or so and try to like see what happens. And so we went down to Milo's basement like a week and a half, 2 weeks later, and just started fucking around. And then like Matt's parents basically gave us their second living room as a rehearsal space. So we just were fucking around trying to like write original shit. But everything was just, all the songs were so structurally different. Like, I mean, I didn't know how to count bars back then. I was just, until it felt right, you know, writing until it felt right, you know what I mean? And so there weren't venues in my hometown. There was one called Smith Opera House where they'd have like plays and shit, which we ended up playing like years later. But there was a pavilion. Geneva's like right at the tip of Seneca Lake. And at the bottom is Watkins Glen, where they have the fucking NASCAR races and shit. So all wine country in between. So there's a gazebo at the lake, and we went down to the rec department and talked to like the Chamber of Commerce, like, yo, we want to play a show here, you know, like, so we went through all the fucking loops and rings of fire, and they were like, fuck it, yeah, you guys can play a show down here. And we, I mean, everybody, like, all the kids that knew about us from school, like, kids were coming from, like, surroundings. So we had fucking, it was this tiny-ass gazebo on the lake and tons of kids. And the lady that gave us permission came down and saw it, and she's like, you guys can play down here whenever. So that became, like, a thing during the summer. We'd have a few shows down the gazebo. And then a spot called Jelly Beans opened. It was, like, a restaurant/bar, but they had, like, these big-ass windows in the front, and they would set the bands up in the front. So the kids that weren't old enough to go in because they served alcohol, they just stand outside and get a free show, you know what I'm saying? We played there a gazillion times.
Such a walk down memory lane of like what it was like at that time period on the East Coast. Of like, you know, you just be playing in some random restaurant, mm-hmm. or like fucking, you know, coffee shop.
Bro, yeah. Like just
so like
wherever,
40 kids, you
wherever
know?
You could play, yeah, man, wherever you could play. And then, you know, like, so then, you know, we graduate. And we all go off to college. I went to art school in Utica. Matt was in Oneonta. Milo, I can't remember where Milo went. And our bass player was in Fredonia. This is all upstate. So that gave us, like, now we're all spread out across New York. So that gave us, like, the college, like, started us with the college circuit. So we'd play my school, Matt's school, Ryan's school. And then word got out. So we started getting booked to play college festivals and shit. So, like, we just started destroying, like, that whole circuit. And colleges pay so much fucking money, and that money doesn't roll over until next semester, so they gotta, like,
right.
They gotta get rid of it, you know what I mean? So we made a grip just touring colleges and shit.
So you're seeing, like, the future right there, like, oh shit, this is an actual business. This actually, a lot of people don't even get that, like, with their band. Like, it takes years and years and years before they actually start to see, like, significant amount of money coming in.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely took some years for us, right. You know what I mean? I mean, like, but being a broke-ass college student, anything. So, I mean,
right.
We played shows where we got paid in fucking Mad Dog, you know what I'm saying? Like, we played an abandoned church in Virginia somewhere, and the dude that promoted the show worked at the stocking or the fucking warehouse for Mad Dog, and he gave us, like, four fucking huge-ass boxes of Mad Dog 2020. Wow. And it was when the Bling Bling first came out with the chain on it, and it said Bling Bling. It was right. Blue. So, like, we're traveling around in a van, mind you, no trailer, just us in a van with all our equipment like this, boxes of Mad Dog. I'm like, yo, throw me a Bling Bling, son. Like, drinking Mad Dog like it was Kool-Aid, like, right. Ridiculous.
Wow. So did it occur to you, like, that, you know, who are you guys looking at, too, for inspiration? Did it occur to you that, like, what you were doing was, like, very out of the ordinary at that time in terms of just sort of mixing rock music and rap and all this different influences? Because you guys would go on to, like, be really at the forefront of all that.
I think, I mean, I don't think we set out to reinvent the wheel as far as, like, genre blending or anything. I just think that we were kind of all, like, you know, four different dudes from four different walks of life that happened to be from the same town, you know what I'm saying? And we all grew up on all types of different music, and that shit just found its way into what we did, you know what I mean? But I mean, we were kind of privy to that. And the way that happened was because we would play with fucking metal bands, you know what I mean? Like feminist slam poets, fucking whoever would let us on a bill we play with. And, wow. And so we got really good at, like, taking crowds that were just, like, and making them have fun, you know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, I cut my teeth a lot, you know, like heavy, like, just being in front of people who weren't necessarily there to see what we had to offer, you know what I mean? But as far as the music, like, I mean, the influences are all over the place. So it'd be kind of almost impossible to, like, set out and say, you know what, we're going to do this. So, mm-hmm. You know, once we were aware that, like, we kind of were doing something different, we were just like, no ceilings, man. Like, let's just fucking keep doing what's always worked for us, and that's just, like, sitting in a room until, you know, we're satisfied with what we made.
Because you guys were, like, real, like, not childhood, but, like, you know, high school friends.
And,
like,
absolutely.
Do you think that was, like, just a huge part of, like, what the energy powering the band came from?
I think it was definitely, we were a fucking family unit, you know what I'm saying?
Because it's different once you're like all in your late 20s, your 30s, and you're like picking some guy who's already been in another band, and you're like sort of assembling the band like that. Like, you guys were really just like out of your adolescence together. It's absolutely, like, very unique, you know?
I don't want to say, it kind of prepared us for what was to come, you know what I'm saying? Like, unfortunately lost our original bass guitar, our bass player, like early on in the game, and actually lost our original guitarist before like we put out our first video and shit, like, because no disrespect, I love Ron to death, but like he had like some like serious anger issues, so like when you're with fucking three or four other dudes and it's stuck in a fucking van and there's just a dark cloud flowing over them, at some point somebody's gonna break, and like me and him got into it a few times and decided to part ways and shit. But
I was looking at on Wikipedia that they have like the graph of like how long each member has been in the band. Mm-hmm. I like looking at those.
They do those. Yeah, yeah.
Like, great visualizer thing.
You know? Or sometimes those fucking lists go down, bro.
I know, because there'd be like 20 people in the band over the years, and there's just tiny little blips. Yeah,
for real, it's OD. Like,
kind of nice to look at. Just to like understand it by looking at colors.
Word up.
Anyway, so so you're doing all those like college shows and shit, then like what's like the next step after that?
So we had like an EP called Greasy Kid Stuff that we recorded for like $150. So we were like slinging those, and I would do all our merch designs back in the day, just black and white prints because we didn't have any money, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But then like we were like, damn, we need some more music to put out. You know what I mean? This is back in the days, like mp3.com. Like, there's another one that I can't remember the name of, Pure Volume. Like Pure Volume was popping back then. So like any, you know, like, which was like the SoundCloud of today, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like any platform that, you know, we could use to upload music, we took advantage of, but like, damn, we only have this one EP. So we're like, fuck it, we need to fucking get our shit together. We released another EP, and then we started working on our first full length, which was the Paper Cut Chronicles. And I think we went at it for about a week and a half. And after that record was done, it was like, what the fuck? Like, I think we got something kind of fresh here, you know what I mean? And that's when, and this is still in the days where you ship demos out to every record label, you know what I mean? Like, and
now so the record labels hunt you down.
Exactly. Oh,
when you get like 4,000 followers, they start banging on your door.
For real. things have changed a lot, to say the least. But so we went through that whole thing. But once we had the record done, you know, what am I talking about? Oh yeah, so Paper Cut Chronicles, first record. So we started getting a little traction, you know, from these sites, like, you know, a lot of really dope feedback, and, you know, people started emailing us back, and oh shit, like, nobody's fuck, like, where the fuck is this coming from? You know what I'm saying? The internet's cool. Like,
right.
This shit might work. Like, and one day we had started setting up tours by now, you know what I mean? Like, not like crazy tours, but like, you know, 6 or 7 dates, like, Northeast, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Or down like to Virginia, whatever. And I think Matt got a email from this kid named Nick Schmecka from Chicago. And he was like, yo, I heard this song, Taxi Driver. And Taxi Driver's a song on our first record where like, it's a story, but it's just using all like hardcore and emo band names, like pop punk band names, like, kind of like, remember how GZA did Labels?
Right, I remember those.
Yeah, so it was basically like the fucking the emo version of Labels. You know what I'm saying?
Nice.
And we shot a video in Geneva. If you can look it up when you get a chance, you're gonna die. We paid $250 for it. It's fucking hilarious.
I think that right in and of itself sort of like sums up why you guys blew the fuck up so much, is that you just weren't scared to do something like that was like maybe a little corny.
Oh, bro, it was,
and like just, but you guys were just like down for it, and like the people just couldn't resist.
Bro, shout out, man, rest in peace to my man Bob. He actually, I had to fucking like beg him to dress up as a girl to be my girlfriend in the video, you know what I'm saying? Right. And Bob was like pushing like 375, you know what I'm saying? He had a wig. You gotta go see the video.
Right.
But we mentioned Fall Out Boy in the song, and I think that's why Nick reached out, because Nick, come to find out, we didn't know, was like, he was doing merch for Fall Out Boy, but he was friends with all those dudes. And so Nick plays the shit. He plays Taxi Driver for Pete. He's like, oh shit. Like, he's like, yo, these dudes are shouting you out, whatever. And Taxi Driver kind of becomes this online thing. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't say viral necessarily, but like, you know, like all the blogs are like Absolute Punk and all this shit were picking up on it because of all the name references and shit.
Right.
And so Nick did a few designs for us. And then we went, Pete invited us to go see them in Buffalo. And we went out to see them play. And I'll never forget, it was the day that Ray Charles had passed away. And Patrick was in the fucking dressing room crying his eyes out. Like, he's, bro, like, from that day, I knew he was a real one. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it had, like, hit him that hard. He was just like, bro, like, I'll see you at the show. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just, like, going through it. I'm like, hey, do your thing. And, like, but I remember the first thing Pete ever said to me when he walked up to me, he's like, he, like, grabbed my arm. He's like, oh, bro, you got tats? I'm like, yeah, man, black people get tattoos, too. You know what I'm saying? What the fuck? He's like, you got tats, bro? I'm like, a couple, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, he's like, yeah, dude, like, oh, I love the shit, blah, blah. So we, you know, we kept in touch via Sidekick for a little bit.
Right.
And we decided, and we had never, like, fucked with samples or anything. And my roommate at the time was my roommate from college. And he's a producer, DJ, just a fucking beast. Probably one of the dopest tattoo artists in upstate right now, too. My man, Sidewan. And we had never fucked with sampling, but I'd always wanted to sample Supertramp's Breakfast in America. But the part I wanted to sample was, don't you look at my girlfriend, she's the only one. So he fucked up and used the, take a look at my, a lot of people don't know that, little Easter egg. But he used the,
could have been completely different.
Completely different. And he used the, take a look at my girlfriend, which fucking worked, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we recorded the whole shit in like, maybe like an hour and 20 minutes, and I think it was either the day before or the day of, Pete hits me, he's like, yo, you guys want to play a show with us? I'm like, duh, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, of course. He's like, here's the thing. I'm like, oh, shit. He's like, it's in Davenport, Iowa. I'm like, motherfucker, we're in Buffalo, you know what I'm saying? Like, New York, like, and then he's like, oh, yeah, and it's in 2 days. I'm like, so literally, like, we did a desk mix of Cupid's Chokehold and fucking hopped in the van and darted to fucking Davenport, Iowa. You know what I mean? And we were on the bill. It was us, Bayside, Armor for Sleep, some other band, and Fall Out Boy. And they put us on first. And at first, kids were literally jaw-dropped, like on some Napoleon Dynamite shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm just like, all right, fuck it. Like, and but we didn't let up. We just did what we do. You know what I'm saying? And by the end, like, everybody was just like bugging out. And after Fall Out Boy played, Pete came. He was like, yo, you guys crushed, blah blah. He's like, I got Bob from Crush, my manager, on the phone. He wants to talk, blah blah. Set up a meeting, blah blah. So we go down to New York after the show. And we crushed that show, too. That's still one of my favorite shows of this day, because, like, just the fucking tension of fucking jumping out of the studio, darting to Davenport, crushing the show, and then basically practically getting signed after that. So we met with Crush, signed with Crush. They were on Fueled by Ramen at the time, and Pete had just got his own imprint, which is the Cadence. So Pete got us our deal with Fueled by Ramen and the Cadence. And
wow.
And then, it's fucking unbeknownst to us, Cupid starts bubbling, you know what I mean? Like, and there was a radio station in Milwaukee that was, like, playing it heavy, heavy. And I think radio stations started, like, you know, they go through each other's fucking playlists and see who's getting most played. And for some reason, like, Chicago area, Milwaukee, that whole area was just heavy on Cupid's. And it was literally like, that was when shit got super crazy, like super duper crazy.
So like in between you signing with Pete and that happening though, like was that like immediately after or was like
it was a build, it was a build, you know what I'm saying? Like, and but we definitely after that Fall Boy show we got a lot more shows, you know what I mean?
Was like, that show like insanely epic from your perspective? Like it was absolutely worth driving there, because I feel like nobody would do that now because a show is kind of like devalued, but back in that era a fucking concert was like everything.
Well, our thing was just like, we love making whoever was playing after us look bad. Like that was like what we fed off of. You know what I'm saying? Like, we fed off that shit.
So they have to move you up the bill, yeah.
For real. Like, you know what I mean? So not too far after that show, we got Nick Stewart started booking us, and so more shows started coming in. But a lot of shows in, you know, the early days of Gym Class were with a lot of bands in that scene, you know what I'm saying? So like, then we played our first Warped Tour, and a lot of kids had already heard of us. So like, they put us in the, I don't know if you remember this, but, or if you went to a lot of Warped Tours.
I went to the Warped Tour once in 1998.
Oh shit.
So.
I think Deftones was on it in 98, right?
Black Eyed Peas were on it.
Oh, pre-Fergie. Shit. I do remember that.
And Eminem was on it.
And they killed it. Yeah, that was the one in Buffalo.
And it was like Eminem, but like he'd only been out for like 6 months.
Somebody knew what the fuck
he was like brand new. Yeah. People throwing shit at him.
And he's like wobbling all over the fucking
stage. I wish I had gone to more, because Warped Tour is like, I mean, such a pivotal part of the culture.
I think we did. So our first Warped Tour experience was in a minivan with all of our equipment. Not a van, a minivan, you know right. what I mean? And we sleep in the motherfucker too. Mm. And they had a hip-hop tent. So they like had all the hip-hop in this one tent called the Code of the Cuts. And yeah. I mean, everybody's played the Atmosphere, fucking Nonfiction, like anybody you could think that was dope in underground, like late 90s, the early 2000s, like they were playing in the Code of the Cuts tent. But it was this little ass tiny tent. And we would pack that motherfucker every day. And like Kevin Lyman started like paying attention.
Right.
And every year we get bumped up to a bigger stage. And then we eventually started headlining the motherfucker. But I think we, all in all, we probably did at least seven, eight Warped Tours. Like,
right.
It was intense. Like, intense. And the first, I'd say the first four or five, we were lugging in all our shit every morning, you know what I'm saying? Like
right.
getting dirty, and you never know what time you're playing until like an hour before the show, before they open the doors.
And when you think about that period of your life, it's like, you know, you guys must have just been driven by just like pure like obsession and love for this band and this music, because it's like nothing.
Definitely.
Like, you know, people just don't really, well, I don't know. I shouldn't say people don't do that, but like, I feel like that people don't have that same like vision of this being like your hero's journey, to just be on the road with your boys for 6 months and just play these shows constantly. Like, how did you take to it? Like, did you just love it and just fall into it?
Absolutely.
Did you have any growing pains?
Not at all. I don't have a single fucking regret, man. Like, and you know, while we're still on Warped Tour tip, that shit was like fucking band camp for derelicts. You know what I'm saying? Like, straight up, like. The most insane fucking fat camp you could ever get sent to.
It's like prison for band dudes, where like they all you like are teaching each other like how to be a bad boy. You
absolutely.
Know?
And
how to be a rock star, really.
For sure. Like, and there was a lot of pretentious like rock stars that weren't really rocking shit, you know what I'm saying? But you learn how not to be as well, you know what I'm saying? Like, but yeah, man, like we definitely had. And I mean, I just turned 40 last month, and I feel like I go do another 8 Warped Tours and be cool. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you'd do it again right now?
Absolutely. I did actually. They ended it last year, and I did the last two shows. Like, they did an East Coast one, and I believe it was Atlantic City, and then they did one out here.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
The life.
It was crazy.
Right. What like from the beginning, I feel like you guys must have attracted a ridiculous amount of women as well.
Oh yeah, that part.
The
that
music
part.
Wasn't really like aggressive, nothing like off-putting for the ladies.
Nah, and we definitely embraced the fact that, I mean, I know we all noticed early on there was a lot of girls coming out to shows. You know what I'm saying? And like for me going like being this fat kid that no girls were fucking with to like, you know what I'm saying? It's like. the fuck is going on? You know what I'm saying? But so, I mean, I was a douchebag, complete dirtbag for like a lot of years, you know what I'm saying? But
right.
Who wouldn't be, you know
when
what
you're
I'm
being like, having that much of something that's typically a very scarce commodity thrown at you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just like not a position that almost any guy is in. And it, like, I could just imagine that the number of girls throwing themselves at you must have been absurd. How the fuck do you, like, where did your mind go with it? Like, how did you even make sense of, like, all this energy coming your way all of a sudden?
Well, see, I just got engaged, like, last summer, so I don't really remember none of that shit.
Shame, Roger. I don't remember none of that shit.
No, man, but it was definitely different, you know what I'm saying? Like, And I don't know, man, like our old bass player Eric was definitely the fucking like Pino star though, for sure. Like I think he was dating that what was that chick's name? She did the porn site with all the scene chicks, like
Oh. Was
it Bernie Angel or some shit?
Joanna Angel.
Yeah, I think he dated her for a minute, so I know they were doing some wild shit.
That's tight.
But you ain't hear it from me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
My name is Benita Betrayal.
But, yeah, so that period of your life was ridiculous.
It was intense,
like,
I mean,
okay, not even, like, the sexual stuff, but, like, how does it feel to just be all of a sudden you're, like, worshipped? You got all these kids just freaking the fuck out in the state. Like, did you fully let it go to your head? Or, like, how when you look back at it, how much of yourself were you able to – you know, keep? Well, or did you fully just drink the Kool-Aid and how was it?
Well, one, it was hard for me to swallow because I knew this shit wasn't genuine. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, after being, you know what I mean? Like, after going through what I went through as a teenager, it's like, you don't give a fuck. I mean, like, if I was just some random dude, like, so I knew from jump that, like, the shit was, like, false as fuck. So I never really bought into it. And, I mean, my dad would never, ever allow me to have my head inflated, so it chopped me down real quick. So I always kept that in mind as well. So, but it was different. Right. It was different.
You guys partying your asses off
on
tour?
Oh, fuck yeah. Had, like, stupid. Like, I had, like, I don't know if, fuck it, I don't care. I talk about the show. I mean, been blatantly, like, open about it in my music. We had a song called Pillmatic, like, on the Paper Cut Chronicles, the first record. And this is before, like, kids were, like, really, really dropping, you know, like, flies and
this
shit.
Is, like, the early days where you could be excused for not knowing how dangerous pills
were.
Yeah,
yeah.
And whereas the now thing is, it, like, should be really obvious to you.
Very obvious, very obvious. And not that I was glorifying it at all. It was just, like, but after I got clean, like, it just didn't feel right performing anymore, you know what I'm saying? But there was a time where, like, kids would literally, like, just throw bags of pills on stage, and my assistant would run out and just at the end of the show, like, and whip out the pill book, like, all right. And it was bad, man. But, I mean, we had such a good thing going. I wasn't trying to fucking burn out, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, I got way too much more to give, you know?
Right. When did you, and the whole band was all getting fucked up too, so you guys were all sort of feeding off each other?
I never would get super fucked up with anybody. I was always, like, on the back of the bus, you know, alone by myself. I mean, we drink together and shit, but I was the only one that really, really got, like, really fucked up, you know what I mean? Everybody else drank, smoked weed a little, but I was the one getting silly, you know, like,
right,
like flirting with death, you know?
When did you have to get clean? And did you have to get clean, like, multiple times?
It took a couple times, you know what I'm saying? Like, I really don't keep track anymore because I feel like the more I focus on, like, how long I've been off fucking drugs, like, the more I think about it, it's like, I'd rather not even think about it, you know what I'm saying? But,
it's a constant struggle for a lot of people.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Know, it's like, it's
absolutely.
Never, because Michael K. Williams just died.
Yo,
and that
fucking,
I was just listening to an interview with him.
Destroy me.
And he's talking about, like, getting clean. But it's also, it's just, you know, his battle wasn't over. Like, it was, he was going to be an addict for the rest of his life, and, like, he was going to have to
Philip
take
Seymour
it day
Hoffman,
by day.
You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody saw that, you know? Like, he had been clean for 20-plus years, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, that damn, I totally fucking spaced
out. But there's a lot of people who are like that, who just, you know, you feel like they've got a hold of their addiction, mm-hmm. and then one day. Just, it pops back up, and mm-hmm. like, hopefully they make it through that, and they're able to be sober again. But it's like, you know, it happen all the time.
The thing is, a lot of people don't realize that, like, you know, like, when you're going hard, and you decide to, like, get your shit straight, and you don't realize that, like, you can't do the amount of drugs that you were doing before you got clean. So a lot of people just dive right in, and it's fucking Croak City, you know what I mean? And I've lost so many fucking friends. I don't have enough fingers and toes to fucking count them, man. It's sad. Like,
and that was all pre-fake drug era.
Oh, yeah,
for the most part.
Absolutely.
You know,
like, I mean, we used to get real fentanyl, like patches. Like,
really?
Yeah. Once again, not glorifying this shit.
No, but I knew other people did that as well.
We used to chew on them shits, like, then, or they even made fentanyl lollipops back in the day.
What?
I
gotta Google that.
On God, fentanyl lollipops. Google it right now. Like, and they taste like grape. Like,
wow,
it's fucking ridiculous.
Like, that's insane.
So and so, with that said, it shows you, like, why are they making lollipop laced fentanyl, or fentanyl laced lollipops?
Most lollipops are not consumed by adults.
That's what I'm saying.
You know?
Or, like, why are they grape flavored?
Right.
You know, like, why is lean purple?
Right.
Black people, black people like purple Kool-Aid. You know what I'm saying? They say they're getting on to it.
Wow.
They got menthol flavored fentanyl now and shit. I'm just kidding.
Really? I was like, whoa, really?
I'm just kidding.
Like, the cartel's getting creative. What the fuck? But yeah, so that, like, you have that whole period of your life. Okay, were you at that time, like, based on your music, it's kind of hard for me to tell, were you more of, like, a hopeless romantic type band guy, or were you, like, a just purely, like, slut band guy?
I was definitely the fucking the hopeless romantic.
Okay, that's like, what I was getting from, like, the music, so I just wanted to make sure. Yeah,
definitely, like, I'm not saying no names, but there's definitely some sluggers in the
band.
Yeah,
you had some hits over the years. Yeah, it's impressive. But yeah, okay. So the band's just going good and everything. Like, would you say that you guys, despite, like, doing all this drugs and everything, and, like, you know, basically having this
chaos? that was just me. I don't want to throw anybody else under the bus.
But, like, you know, you guys sound like it was kind of chaotic, but for the most part, you guys just holding it together for all those years.
I was a full blown functioning addict. You know what I'm saying? Like, we did the AMAs, and I was fucking, like, 3 feet off the ground. You know what I'm saying? I don't remember this shit at all, but we crushed it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I watched the playback. I'm like, damn, killed it. Thank God. You know what I'm saying? But, like, that's no way to live, you know, like, hoping that you get through a show, you know, hoping that you perform, and hoping that you please the people that paid money to come see you. Like, it's the worst. Like, so, I mean, my first tour, like, clean, where it was just like, all right, no smoking on the bus, no nothing. Like, it was awkward as fuck. Like,
really?
Super awkward, but then I just found myself getting high off the performance, you know what I'm saying? Like, getting off stage and being, like, super adrenalized and, like, ready to do what the fuck ever. But then the flip side of that is that, like, now you got all this energy and you're hype. Now what the fuck do you do?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But, like, how was that? Like, you know, getting to bed after performing when you, you know, are just trying to, like, stay mellow, you know? Like, drugs are all about, like, altering your state of mind. And
so we literally, like, We have band nights and watch movies and shit. Like, we didn't turn into 4-H camp or anything. But, like, I mean, like, people were still getting down doing the thing. I wasn't like, all right, everybody has to fucking be clean because I'm going to some shit. But, you know, like, they respected the fact that I was trying to, you know, like, straighten out. And the crazy part is, like, some of them didn't even know it was as bad as it was. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But, yeah, like, I feel like it brought us a lot closer because we do, like, before that, we hit a city, and, like, they, like, two guys have shit planned for the day, like, when we didn't have shit to do, and we started doing more shit together, you know what I mean? Like, dumb shit, like tubing in fucking Texas down the Guadalupe, you know what I mean? Like, shit we would never do together any other time.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the sort of unfortunate part about touring is that you get to go everywhere,
but you don't get to do shit.
You sit in the hotel room, or you sit backstage of the show, and, like, you get to have this amazing experience of performing your songs for the audience, but that's kind of
on to the next,
kind of the same every night. And, like, you know,
it's like living in a fucking fishbowl, bro, like a moving fishbowl.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, you're just seeing all this shit and you stop and see. But I made a vow to, like, you know, when I start touring again, to actually take some time and fucking, I've been around the fucking world 8-9 times and couldn't tell you shit about a lot of the cities that I've been to, you know what I mean?
Is that a regret?
That's probably my main regret, is not fucking like taking time to just walk around. And our drummer, he was on it from day one. When we started like touring heavy, he was just like, and I got his ass in some trouble in Mexico, but
right. That's
a long story.
No, yeah, I think I wrote that down. Prison in Mexico or something.
So we're playing this show in for MTV in Mexico. You know, they have the spring break shit.
Right.
And so we get there a couple of days early, and the first night we go out and Steve-O's at this place. I'm like, oh shit, it's gonna be a bad one, bro. Like, and I got shit faced. And me and Matt usually were like we stay together no matter, like, you know what I mean, like on tour, if we're out together, whatever. And Matt disappears. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, whatever. Like, me and Steve are getting retarded. And so me and Matt were sharing a room. I get back to the hotel and I see the windows are slid open and the curtains are like flowing. And I see his slippers in front of the window. And I'm like, yo, my whole shit just like fell, like my heart just bleh. I'm like, and I like literally stood there for like 5 minutes. I'm like, I gotta go to this window. I gotta go see that. I don't want to see him like splatted on the floor. I mean, so I'm walking towards the window. I'm like, God, please don't. Please, 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 please. And I look out the window. Nothing. Like, what the fuck? All right, cool, cool. At least he's not dead. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I'm waiting for him. I finally fall asleep. The next morning, I find out this motherfucker got so wasted. He like found some sliding doors and slid them open. Went into somebody's place and like fell asleep on the couch, and he wakes up and he's surrounded by cops with machine guns. Policia, policia, policia. And he's like, what the fuck? Like, so they snatch him up, they take him to jail. The owner of the house said that he stole like a $15,000 statue or some shit from the house. Like, where the fuck's it at then? Like you picked him up in the house. So like, super sus. And so we have to play a show that day. And so we finally found the jail they had him in. It's like dirt floors. He's in the corner like this, mad dirty, looking like Shaggy and shit. And they actually, like, the dudes that were in jail with him, like in the cell with him, were calling him, oh, Shaggy, Shaggy, Shaggy. And I'm looking at these motherfuckers, like, you touch him, I'll find a way through these fucking bars and hurt you, I'm telling you. So I'm like, Matt, don't worry, we'll get you out, we good.
Right.
But it didn't happen like that. So the jail's like, we're gonna need this amount of money, X amount of money, or we're gonna put him in another place down here. And then basically that's what they do. They'll arrest you and they keep putting you deeper and deeper into Mexico until like you give up that dough. So wow. We had to pay a lot of motherfucking money.
How much? Five figures? Wow.
Bro. Yeah. It was serious.
That's impressive. I'm impressed that the Mexican government knows that they could extort you for that much. That they like they could tell that you guys had something they were working with, yeah.
I mean, so Matt obviously didn't make the show because we were trying to figure this shit out. You know what I'm saying? But thankfully, we were down there with the Academy is, and we toured with them so many times that Butcher from the Academy played for us. But the stage went out, had a catwalk out into a pool, and the pool's full of people, so the catwalk's full of water. So I go out there and I'm trying to fucking make sure he's, you know what I mean, like playing the right songs and shit, and I'm slipping and sliding, and then I'm in the back of my mind, I'm like, my man's in this nasty ass jail in Mexico. Like, it was wild. No more parties in Mexico, bro.
Yeah, like, go to Mexico, but don't break the law. That would be my advice to pretty much anybody, because I listened to this story from this dude talking about going to prison in Mexico for a couple months, and he said there were kids in the prison that had like been born there and were
born
just,
in the motherfucking prison,
and were just had lived there their whole life.
That's like some Bane shit.
I'm like, that's not fair, bro. The kid didn't do anything. What the fuck?
Yo, collateral damage. What the? That's sad.
God damn.
That's some sad
that's,
shit.
That's the craziest tour story, the most extreme thing that happened?
That's definitely not the craziest shit. The craziest.
Because you guys were like warriors.
Shit,
how many non-stop months out of a year were you doing on average for a few years there?
Bro, I think... There were times where I think one of the longest was when we did the I Am Music tour with Wayne. It was us, Wayne, Payne and I think Keisha Cole did the first half, and what's her name? Homegirl that did the song with Kanye and Neo, Knock Me Down. Remember that song? She did a song with Timberland. You know who I'm talking about. Carrie Hilson. Yeah, she did the other half. And so that, I can't remember exactly how long that tour was, but it did so well. The first round, they did secondary markets. So, like, we were on the road for a long-ass time. About 6-7 months. But, I mean, our time off when we were, like, traveling would be, like, 3 or 4 days here and there. You know what I'm saying? Wow. Like, yeah, it was pretty intense. It got to a point where, like, I go home and now I've been unpack my bag. You know what I mean? I just take shit out. And, like, I'm still like that to this day. Like, right. I go to a hotel, I keep all my shit in my luggage. You know what I mean? And you grab what I need, put it back in.
Did that, like, that does something to you.
Oh,
like, your brain really is just not like everybody else when you've been on the road for that long.
It's literally like I said, it's like living in a bubble, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I honestly feel like it stunted my development a little bit, you know what I'm saying? Because, like...
You're being, like, trotted around the world, being adored. Yeah. Every place you go, it's just like, oh, here, we're going to insert you into this fucking hall full of people that are going to suck your dick for an hour, and then you're going to be swept away.
Enticing. Yeah. It sounds enticing, but, like...
But it's got to do something to you, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, like,
hard to hold down any kind of real relationship.
Oh, absolutely. Girls, I mean, I finally
found
the
idea of it, but then
once they're in it, they're like
this is not a life. This is not a life you want to live, ladies.
Hell no. Definitely. You gotta be a fucking unicorn for sure.
A couple weeks here and there, sure, like a month, you know, whatever, but like, you know, 9 months out of the year, like, it's just like, what woman would want to stay on board for that after a while?
It takes a strong one, G. It takes a strong one, and it took me a long time to meet her ass. Like, actually, I've known her for a long time, but I think it took her a long time to understand it, you know what I'm saying? But
were you guys like, did you feel very financially comfortable at that point? Like, had the deals that you signed, were they good ones? Were you actually seeing the fruits of your labor?
We had a really fucking great team, like a really great team, you know, and I have a great team now, you know what I mean? Like, I definitely had to rearrange the roster, you know what I'm saying, to rebuild the team. But I like to think that, I mean, there's definitely been some shady shit that I've seen go down, but like, none of the run of the mill, like, dirty label shit that you usually hear about. I mean, and I feel lucky as fuck that I've never really had to deal with a lot of label or industry bullshit. You know what I mean?
That's good. I feel like everybody in your position usually has a story about how they got completely fucked by the label
exactly.
When they started their career. You know?
I can't say that. I really can't. Like, they were behind us, man. Like, and, you know, there was a time where, like, you know, Fall Out Boy were kind of out of commission, and you know, we were all in the same management, and we were kind of like holding the fucking torch for a while, you know what I'm saying? And that was a burden in and of itself, but like, there's no like manuscript that teaches you how to fucking maneuver through this shit, like, once you're in it, you know? And so like I was saying, like, living in a bubble, like, once, you know, I think the last single I put out, maybe I put a single out a couple months ago, the last single was like 2013 or 14. I took some time just like fucking, I was focusing on my painting and a lot of other shit. And I don't want to say music took the back burner, but just trying to like figure out a lot of shit. And that's what I ended up moving out to the woods, you know what I'm saying? Just to like fucking, this shit is too chaotic.
So you had basically just like had enough of just the turbulence of being famous as fuck and constantly on the road and everything. You decided that you just wanted to take a step back.
And, you know, being too accessible to management and a label, you know what I'm saying? Like feeling like they could reach me at any time. I hate when I feel like somebody can just reach out. I'm like, hey, you know, like, and, Not in a bad sense, like, but, you know, when you're working on music, the last thing you want is, like, label execs coming, like, so what you got, you know what I mean? So, like, I have a studio at the crib. I work on music out there all the time, but I wrapped up my latest album in Nashville called A Hole, a whole different battery in my back down there. Shout out to Jared, who produced the record with me, and Matt, who played drums on it. Like, a whole different vibe.
Right. Did you guys, like, just going back to the breakup, we'll talk more about the new album and stuff, but, like, did you guys ever specifically say, like, okay, we're breaking up, or was it more like it just kept getting more and more turbulent? Because you guys have been touring the same songs for so long that I feel like there's just that natural urge of, like, I don't give a fuck if I'm playing to an audience that's 5% of the size. I got to just do something different. I feel like you guys sort of started all these different side projects and sort of went in all these different directions.
Yeah, well, the side project thing was never, like, a hindrance. Like, I feel like it was, like, one hand washed the other. Like, if any of our side projects caught some traction, it put more focus on Gym Class. So, like, that was never a thing. But, you know, it was definitely, like, an escalation and a whole amalgamation of a lot of shit that built up in to the point where Matt and I were kind of just, like, let's let sleeping dogs lie for a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's funny because we were actually talking about, speaking with my label earlier, and he asked, like, you ever see Gym Class getting back together? And I'm like, we'll see. You know what I'm saying? But, like, right now it's just, like, there's a lot of cannonball holes in the ship, you know what I'm saying?
Is it personal issues, or is it just the fact that you don't really want to tour that?
Oh no, I mean, I can't wait. I mean, shit, we got four or five full lengths, and so we got a pretty decent catalog, you know what I mean? Right. And on top of my solo shit, so I never get bored, and I can't wait to fucking get back out again, man. Like, but it's definitely gonna take some rebuilding, I think.
Every band ends up like this, though, where there's,
and I never thought we would. I think they all think that day is never going to come either, you know what I mean? But, I mean,
you guys were good for so long,
yeah, right? When we hit the 20-year mark, like, damn, like, I've spent more than half my life in this fucking band, you know what I mean? Like, that was, for me, like a reality check in and of itself. Like, damn, like, more than half my fucking life, you know? And, but honestly, like, things had kind of gotten so toxic towards the end that I feel like it was for all, like, the best of all of our fucking mental health, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
But, yeah, but at the end of the day, like, we're all still supportive of each other, you know what I mean? No bad blood for the most part.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just the idea that you're going to have people that you were close to 20 years ago when you were a completely different person, and then you're just going to hold, I know not all the band's, like, original members and shit, but, like, the idea that you were just going to be able to hold that together, I mean, it seems almost like an impossible task or something that's, like, bound to, like, be left with some scars at a certain point, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, one thing I was, like, cock strong and sure about was the fact that, like, you know, although we were, kind of accepted into that scene, like, I was like, yo, there's, and Matt and I used to have this conversation all the time, like, there's gonna come a time where all this shit just kind of fizzles out, you know what I'm saying? And, like,
yeah, the fact that
we didn't fucking, you know, like, bend over and try to fit into what was popping on Warped Tour or what was going on in the time, like, we'll still be standing, and, like, it proved true, you know what I'm saying? Like, on a couple different planes. But yeah, man, like, I wouldn't change a motherfucking thing.
Right. Because, I mean, but are you, like, saying no to money, like, that you guys could be getting from going on tours and stuff, obviously?
I think it's pretty well known that, you know, like, we're kind of, like, dissolved at this point. Or,
but you still got to get hit up by festivals that want to book you and give you good-ass checks, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what's the fascinating part, is that the ego is so strong that it gets in the way of the back.
So sometimes it's a little more than ego. You
right, well, I mean, hey, I don't know. I have no idea, so, you know. But it gets complicated.
Yo, you remind me of one of my friends growing up. It's hilarious.
Damn.
Hilarious.
I'd love to meet him.
Hilarious.
So wait, you signed to T-Pain?
So what happened was on the I Am Music tour, Pain had a whole studio set up on his bus, and him and I just started making records together, like, fucking crazy. No one's heard of them, but
no one's heard. A bunch of dope records, no one's heard.
But right. actually, we put out the Nappy Boy mixtape, and I got a couple of joints on that. That was a while ago, but so we start cranking out records, and I was like, let's just do a record, you know what I'm saying? And like, we had this grand idea. I never signed anything contractually. It was just kind of like the homie, like, you know what I mean? And he produced a couple joints on my solo record and gave me a huge ass nappy boy chin. I still have to this day. And like,
wow.
Yeah. Shout out to Payne.
That's legendary.
He's a big sweetheart.
How often do you talk to him?
Actually, I just talked to him about a week ago.
But so if you want to put music out now, does he have to be involved with it? Are you signed like that? You said there was no paperwork.
Yeah, so, no paperwork.
Okay. That's what's up. So like, where do you see, you know, like, how do you view where you're at in your career right now? And like, you know, how, like, I was watching the video that you put out. It felt like you were sort of like addressing like a bunch of different traumas that you've had live through over the years.
Just 2020, basically.
That alone, like, what a motherfucker.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it started like the top of January. I lost my best friend, Bob, like one of my best friends in the whole fucking world, man. Like, and another crazy thing, like my mom's biological father, like, he wasn't too hip to her having a kid with a black dude, you know what I mean? So like, he didn't want anything to do with me when I was born, you know what I'm saying? And like, and over the years, like, I mean, even before anything happened with my career or anything, like, he started reaching out to my mom, or like, you know, I want to meet him, blah, blah. Like, he had kind of like realized he was being a fucking idiot, you know what I mean? And I don't want to call my grandfather an idiot, he just passed. But, you know, he realized that, you know, but like, he's down, like, deep in Georgia, Jessup, Georgia. Like, it's, I don't even think it's on the map, bro. Like, dirt roads and shit, you know what I mean? But, and he had just turned 80, and I was like, I gotta meet this man before, you know, he leaves us. And so I took a trip down there. I flew down to, I had to fly to Savannah and then take like a fucking $300 Uber to get to Jessup. It was ridiculous. But I showed up at the crib, and he was standing in the doorway, and like, it was like I was looking at myself, you know what I mean? Like, big ass ears, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, same facial structure. And I'm like, this shit is weird. Like, and I just rolled, and he gave me the biggest hug ever, man. And I met my Nana, and like, I stayed there for a week and ended up missing my flight, so I stayed for another week. So I got to hang with him for like 2 weeks. We hung out, went fishing, and did all that old country shit.
You feel like that helped you understand yourself and where you come from better?
Absolutely, man. Like, for real, for sure. It helped me understand, like, how my mom grew up, and you know what I mean? And
you could just see the reflections in her through him.
It was insane.
That's deep.
It was really insane. And so I stayed for a good 2 weeks. I didn't want to leave, man. Like, I mean, I saw some wild shit. Like, my little cousin Jonathan's eating a pickled pig's foot, like, out of a plastic bag. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I ain't never seen no shit like this. But rolling around with a fucking revolver, hanging out the back of his fucking, like, in the back of his jeans and shit. Like, where the fuck am I at? But I love it. You know what I'm saying? I love this shit. And then I went back down a few months later, and I came back, and I went back, my Nana had passed away, and not too long after, I met both of them for the first time, and then a couple months after she passed away, he passed away, and it was just like back to back to back to back, like, it was nothing but funerals, you know what I'm saying? And yeah, that song was a tough one to write and record, just like... 2020 fucking sucked. Fuck 2020.
Yeah, no, definitely during 2020 there's like been a lot of moments where I've had to just think about the fact that, like, oh yeah, I'm probably gonna outlive a vast majority of people that I'm close with.
It's sad to think about, you know? Man, it's sad. And like, bro, we came here, I forgot it was Labor Day. Like, we came in yesterday, and LA looked like this fucking post-apocalyptic, like dystopian fucking Mad Max, because there was nobody out, like, and everything was gated up and closed. I was like, damn,
it,
like,
was wild, like, man. It was, you had never scary, seen it like that before. It was like, you know,
I was like, bro, like, you sure we should be here?
Yeah,
something. It's like Labor Day. I'm like, all right, I'll take that one, I guess.
That was a pretty fucking unique time. We were just we went out riding bikes and we were just cruising around and there's fucking nobody.
Oh, I remember seeing pictures of Times Square. Like, I mean, bro, we were double gloved. Like in the beginning, we were double gloving, fucking double masking, hoodie strung up. Like, right. Fuck, why am I even out here? You know what I'm saying? And like, it kind of got like, I guess we kind of got lazier. So fuck the gloves. You know what I'm saying? But like, especially in New York, the shit just kept going up and up and up and up. And like, then you see pictures of the piles of bodies and shit. And,
oh boy.
Yeah, it's ain't nothing that can compare you for some shit like. That, you know, like, man, it gives me the fucking willies, man, just thinking about, like, we're living through some weird fucked up movie, you know?
Right. No, yeah, it's been a wild one. I mean, where do you see yourself at in your movie? You know, you've had some, like, extremely high points in your life at a young age. You made a huge impression on the culture. I mean, like, where do you want, like, where would you ideally like to see yourself going from here, and how do you see the rest of your life playing out, ideally?
Kind of like the end of Purple Rain, you know what I'm saying? You know, like after he plays Purple Rain, and, like, he gives Apollonia that smile, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I want to make a bunch of fucking babies.
Ooh,
and okay. Get back on the road, and, you know, just, and have space for them to chill when they want to come out, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can't see myself not making music or being artistic in some way, shape or form before I leave this fucker, you know what I'm saying?
But you still have that deep desire to get back on the road?
Oh, absolutely. That shit doesn't go away. Mm. It's a love hate too, you know what I mean? Like,
it's like an addiction kind of, you know, would you say?
Without a doubt. Like, I mean, if I can, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like towards the end of any tour, you're like, I can't wait home. You get home the day after, like, man, I can't wait to get the fuck back on the road, man. Like,
right.
It's definitely like,
it only takes a day for you to get back to the state of wanting to be back on the road.
A
really?
Day or two, yeah. It's different, man. Like we were talking about earlier, it's a lifestyle. It's definitely a lifestyle. It's funny because I see a lot of bands like going on tour, and there's like 3 dates on the poster, and I'm like, tour, like, what the fuck? You're going on vacations, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, you've definitely been on the road like way longer than I've ever been on the road, but there's definitely been times in my life where I was away for like a month, mm-hmm. and you come back and you, like, you know, go get some food with your girl, and you're just like, I have no fucking clue what the fuck I'm supposed to say to you. Because I've just, and this is like the primary difference, I think, is that when you are at home and you're doing roughly the same shit every day,
yeah.
your brain starts to notice the little differences, you know, the little things.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on tour, you're every moment of the day, you're being bombarded by something new. So it's like, you know, you're not used to having to sort of like work for just something being interesting. Just automatically, every moment of the day, you're seeing something crazy you've never seen before. And it makes you, like, somehow your brain gets wired in such a way that people just can't fucking relate to you. Mm-hmm. And it takes a little while for you to, like, break that down, get back to being
crazy you say that, because, like, I remember early on touring, and I couldn't wait to get home and tell all my friends the stories. And then it comes up to a point where you're just like, same shit. Like, y'all want to hear it again? You want to hear it again? You know what I'm saying? Like, but yeah, it definitely gets old. But then, like I said, like, you get that tap on your back, like, come on, let's go. But yeah, man, like, well, it's funny because in the beginning, like, it was out of necessity because I was homeless for a minute, like, when we first started touring. So, like, I was like, I don't want to go home.
Right.
I can't go home. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's see how motherfuckers got a couch.
What do you think is the part that drives you the most at this point? Is it that you're, like, at your most profitable when you're on the road? Or is it the fact of, like, just something about the experience?
It's definitely the experience, you know what I'm saying? Like, we were literally on tour when the TomTom came out. So, I mean, we were MapQuesting and using atlases and shit before. And the TomTom came out, motherfuckers were fighting to drop the band. Like, no, son, it's my turn. Like, fuck you. I'll kill you. Want to fight for it? Like fighting to use
I could
GPS,
not fucking,
you know,
believe
saying?
It the like, first time I saw somebody whoa! With one of those. I was just we're not printing out MapQuest directions anymore?
It was like fucking God had just went, here.
Yeah.
Use this tool, my friends. And, bro, like, we used the shit out of it. That's something, that's an addiction I'm trying to stop, is saying bro and bruh. Like, I'm doing bad, bro.
It's better than Xanax.
I think I need a fucking, I definitely need a intervention with this bro shit. Way better than Xanax.
Yeah. No, you're always at battle with like your tics.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the shit that you say that you don't really think about saying, but you say it.
And it's like absolutely. I say absolutely way too much.
Yeah.
Far too much.
Or I'll watch a random interview with myself and I'll just be saying like too much. And like. I just want to go back in time and kick myself in the fucking teeth.
Well, like is almost like the pause while you think word. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, or.
But I would rather speak slowly and never say like.
Yeah. I like that. And I like that idea.
Take a little extra time to think of the next word. My ideal self would speak like that.
Yeah, I got fun. I got like this fucking funnel, like, and I just start stuttering because I got so much. You know what I mean, like, I've been like that my whole life. Like, everything's just trying to get out at once. I'm like, slow down, down, down. Yeah, I like that though. I'm gonna definitely put that in my notes.
Definitely.
Talk slower.
Are you gonna you see yourself staying in upstate New York for the time being? Like you like
absolutely.
You want a tour, but then absolutely. You like to be able to come back to something very slow. You'd never be an LA guy again.
I've never lived here.
Oh, you never.
You know
did?
What's crazy okay. is a lot of people thought we were from here because when we shot the Cubits video, we shot in MacArthur Park and fucking Compton. Like we were all over. And
I was just watching that, and thinking that thought, I'm like, wow, they got a lot of good LA destinations in here.
Yeah, yeah. And so people automatically thought we were from Cali, and but I've never lived out here. I stayed with Pete for I stayed with him for a while, and I got my taste, and I was like. My feet don't fit the concrete out here, bro.
I'm super fascinated by the fact that you are a part of this big lie that Tyga was related to you.
So here's the thing. here's the thing. So like, and I don't know. Like I think Gata spoke on it. Like
yeah.
And
I mean, the way he framed it is he said that like at that time to the label, it felt like it was going to be so hard for the fans to grasp Tyga and how he was going to just.
That's
be,
how Tyga felt.
Or that the label right. felt, I guess, that like a non like gang affiliated young light skinned black dude that they weren't going to be able to really love Tyga unless they had like a good backstory from where he came from.
I think that was his excuse for telling people that he was my cousin. You know what I'm saying? Like that ass. Like I
really?
Think that was his excuse. For,
Tyga
like,
just wanted to be your cousin.
I get like bro, like it's so weird because like I'll see like. Interviews or whatever, he's like, yeah, you know, Wayne put me on. It's like, that hold my pearls. Like, damn, I thought I put your first record out. I thought I brought you out on your first five tours. You know what I'm saying? But like, I don't trip on shit like that, man.
People like to simplify the narrative over time,
or completely rewrite it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, it sounds good to say, hey, Lil Wayne did it all for me.
For sure.
You know,
for
that's
sure.
like you know, Lil Wayne is royalty in hip hop. So I can understand the desire to simplify the narrative.
So I guess at some point I was Lil Wayne cool enough to be Tyga's cousin.
Right. Damn. Okay. So that's interesting. Now we have more information. It might not have been.
I definitely.
A diabolical
I mean. I definitely.
Label plot.
I looked after him like he was family for sure, and Gator. You know what I mean? Like right. I took those boys everywhere with me, and I couldn't be more proud of Gator, man. Doing right. his thing.
How much time do you spend thinking about like your legacy or like how you want to be remembered? Do you give a fuck about how you're remembered in like hip hop specifically? Like how do you think about that?
I don't give a fuck. Like I know like the kids that came up listening to us and still enjoy what I do or you know what I mean, like throw on Papercut Chronicles here and like I know we built our fan base grassroots, you know what I'm saying? Like we put in the work and damn near died doing it, you know what I'm saying, a few times over. So, like, I mean, I got a box full of, you know, like, when I got my shit together, kids would come up and start giving me, instead of fucking pills, they start giving me their 30-day tokens and shit, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, so I got a box of shit, but I mean, I think, and when I go down to my studio, I have, like, I've kept every laminate, every tour I've ever been on, and like the shit weighs like 110 pounds. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
like,
really? You're one of so, those like, guys who kept the lanyards.
Every single one, and like every time I pick it up, it's just like a reminder of how much work we put in. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, I feel like when I am dead and gone, like I feel somebody's gonna pick up a record and be like. When this shit come out again, this shit is kind of dope. You know what I mean? So if that happens one time while I'm in the ground, like, I'll be stoked.
But do you ever feel like you guys just aren't really necessarily given the credit you deserve, because you kind of came out during this like weird black hole era of music where like, you know, you would be able to say probably like we had like number one songs and records and shit, like or were you like charting like that? Or I feel like
the streams
weren't accounted for in the same way back in the day, but different. you still were selling hard copies.
Okay. We've got a bunch of plaques. Like, I don't talk about this shit a lot, but the last Gym Class record, Paper Cut Chronicles 2, had I think 3 or 4 number ones on it.
Wow.
Ass Back Home, Stereo Hearts, The Fighter with Ryan Tedder, and I could be wrong, but I think there's another one. And then
that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean we've had a lot of joints. I think Cupid's a billionaire, kind of like just stomped over everything else that we did for a while.
But is that sometimes kind of feel like? Like, did it feel like a curse almost, in the sense that you have some songs that are so huge that it kind of like overshadows the rest of your body of work?
I think that happens with everybody. You know what I mean? I feel like you're lucky enough
to have that fucking record.
Like, it's like, no, we're not playing this shit no more. It's like, whatever. but we're creative. So like, we flip shit up, and like, you know, like, as long as we're having fun doing it, like I've never played a show and had it feel like a burden, you know what I'm saying? And like, that's when it's time to go do something else, you know what I mean? But I don't see it coming anytime soon.
What kind of music do you get inspired by or motivated by at this point?
I'm a nostalgia junkie, bro. Like, really? I just love like late 90s hip hop, like 70s funk, like huge on like Philly soul, like Gamblin' Huff type shit. Mm. But I'm also into fucking, you know, Terror and everything. Like, bro, like my music, I'm like.
Shout out Scott Vogel.
Oh, the man.
We gotta get him on here.
You haven't had him on yet?
No, but he hit me up after the Danny Diablo interviews.
Shout out to Danny Diablo. That's
another legend.
Yo, he told me that he had done No Jumper, and I was like, oh shit, like. That's the whole thing.
That's Danny, a blueprint for a legend right there, man.
Absolutely.
People are gonna be revisiting.
I get anxiety. I love Danny to death, but I get anxiety because he's so intense. Like, it's a good anxiety. It's a good anxiety.
He had so many quotables on the podcast.
I bet.
I still am who I am. I still like to drink. Still like to do a bunch of coke. Fight. I don't give a fuck.
Like, he's dead ass serious.
Like, I am who I am, bro. End of dead the day, like, I might have changed, I might have slowed down a little bit, but I ain't slowed down the whole way, bro.
I ain't slowed down the whole way. That's a whole Danny.
I'm paraphrasing. You should watch the interview if you want to hear what he actually said. But
yeah. I have to. That's my man's
for sure.
Have you had Scam up here yet?
No. That'd be lit though.
A whole nother anxiety attack.
Okay.
He's so lit, like that motherfucker. I could literally like. Just like watching like for hours, just do his thing. Did you see that when he went viral for the catcall shit?
No.
So like, some website did this thing where like, is it still cool to catcall in New York?
Right.
And they, yo, of all people, they find Scam, and this motherfucker went. He's like, so yo, Twitch, like starts catcalling. Like it became this whole thing, and like he was everywhere for like a minute. Like,
wow.
Yeah, you gotta get Scam up here. He's got some stories.
No, that would be legendary. I would do that for sure. Holy fuck. All right, so what's your game plan for new shit that you want the people out there to be in tune with?
Actually, I'm out here to
new album.
To do No Jumper.
Yeah.
Obviously. So I just wrapped up I didn't just wrap it up, it's been wrapped up for a little bit. But I just signed a one album deal with Hopeless Records, and really, really excited about it, man. This album has been probably 8-9 years in the making, you know what I mean? Like, with everything that went on with Gym Class, like, I just said, fuck it, like, I'll just come out of pocket. I can't not see this album through, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just so attached to it, and wrapped up the album in Nashville, and then ended up, during the pandemic, we ended up recording like 3 or 4 more songs like remotely. Like my producer and one of my best friends, Jared, he finagled some way for him to control, like control the session from Nashville while I was at my crib. And one of those songs was Spoonful of Cinnamon, which we dropped a couple months ago. And we're shooting a video this Thursday out here for the next joint. It's called Love Me Back to Life. And the album's called Never Slept Better. I'm going to give the people a couple more jams and then shoot the release date out there. But the album's done. It's crispy. I love it. I can't stop listening to it. I think you're archetypical gym class fan.
Definitely a word that's never been said on a jumper before.
You're archetypical gym class fan.
That's a good word, though.
I think they would definitely gravitate towards it, but I feel like I've definitely grown, you know, within the time it's taken to make this record, you know what I mean? Like, and I just feel like I got a lot more confidence on this album, you know what I'm saying? It's like, there's a joint that's kind of like on some Bill Withers shit, like, that I never thought I imagined myself doing, and I like 12 vocal stacks and shit, like,
wow.
Did a lot of like, I don't want to say experimenting, but like, you know, like I just try to push myself every album just to kind of like, come on, motherfucker, like, you know what I mean? Like, they can listen to that record if they want to listen to that record, you know what I mean? That's always been like a huge, like, one of those fucking voices in the back of my head, like, don't do anything like the last one. Please, like, just don't. Because, like, I mean, when Billionaire blew up, you know, I started getting, like influxes of folders from producers. And every song sounded like Billionaire. I'm like, can y'all send me some shit without an acoustic guitar, you know what I mean? And, like, a reggae rhythm, please. Like,
that's so funny.
So it's weird because, some, you know, people get one taste of what you do and they think that's what you do, you know what I'm saying? And, like, it was crazy. I mean, I'm getting like folders from like pretty, like, you know, esteemed producers, like, and they're I'm like, come on, man.
Well,
like,
that shit's hot now, kind of.
You wouldn't send that shit to anybody else.
But,
you know
like now you got like, you got a fucking a Juice WRLD or a Lil Peep and like all these artists who basically were like kind of like referencing a lot of stuff from like the MySpace era in music. And it's like it's new again, you know. And even those are artists, obviously, rest in peace over the past few years. But there's all,
sad,
I mean, there's just a lot of influence, like where you can see the influence from shit that you guys were early on.
It's love when people, you know, like, you know, kids that are doing it today come up like, yo, like, who was I talking to? Like I was working with my man Remy the other day, and he was just like, bro, like, or even my man West Period, like. I worked with him. He came out to my crib for you familiar with Wes? You should check him out. He's really dope. He's from out here. He came to the crib and we worked on this project with a few other homies from New York, and he showed me a picture of me and him at one of my shows from like fucking 2008 or some shit. Wow. And then we took another picture, like, and it's like, this was just a kid that was at one of my shows, and now we're chilling, making music together. You know what I'm saying? Like, shit like that. It's like, yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this.
Time flies. We all grown up.
Hell yeah. Now, believe me.
Thanks. Travi, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Yo, thanks for having me, fam.
Very important story to be told right there, I think.
Word up. We're actually working on a documentary with my man Jason from Fever 333. And, that should be out once we get this shit sussed out and figured out. But yeah, we're gonna work on it. He also came up biracial and went through the exact same shit I went through. You know what I'm saying? So we kind of relate on that plane. You know what I mean? Like, like, kind of feeling like we're being tugged each and every way. But like, he did the same thing I did and said, "Fuck it, I'm gonna be me." You know what I'm saying? But thank you for having me, man.
Appreciate it, man. Well, for real.
Absolutely. You got to teach me how to do that motherfucking
kendama. Well, nojumper.com for everybody out there if you want to get your hands on one. Travi, No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us on YouTube.
Easily.
Patreon, easily. iTunes, all that. Like, comment, subscribe. Nojumper.com if you want to support. I got to piss like a motherfucker right now. Appreciate y'all.
Yeah, tourist out. Oh, yeah.